Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. And if the podcast sounds better, it should. We're doing it in person. Hey, Bob.
It's terrible, Matt, because you introduced the idea of great sound, but all I want to do is smile at you.
Yeah.
And that makes no sound. It might actually, because I'm smiling so hard, it might actually crack the air.
This is like literally Bob got here about 4 minutes ago. We talked about things we can't probably talk about live on the pod. And so what you are listening to is two good friends who haven't seen each other in like a year. You did one episode like a year ago or something.
Yeah, there was a little break in the clouds, and I think I came to your place or you came to mine. I don't even remember, but basically for the better part of 2 years, we've been doing this via Zoom, Skype, whatever's been available.
Yeah.
The sound quality hasn't been good. Mm-hmm. We apologize for that. We know.
We know.
So let all your friends know, Macko and Cause in audio 4K.
Yeah, or just
or whatever it is. Whatever
the hell it is. So first off, how was the streetcar?
Exactly as I remembered it.
Was it busy, though? I imagine it's not as busy. I've been on the subway a bunch. Subways are empty.
Yeah, it wasn't as busy, but the important thing was at Ossington and Queen, a bunch of guys with beer and some really loud hip-hop came on.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and I don't know what it is about the guy who carries like the phone and he's blasting hip-hop, but at some point before he gets to his actual destination, he will forget where he's supposed to be and then like start kicking at the door and yelling at the driver, "Hey, let me out, let me out." and then realize this isn't my stop.
And all the passengers are like, "Let him out. Just let him out.
Whatever you do, open those freaking doors." It was good. I mean, I'm sitting there listening to Stravinsky in my headphones, taking notes for this pod. The guy next to me is in a long parka with a bunch of beer shoved into the pockets. And I'm like, yes, I missed this.
Of course. Yeah. I was out yesterday and it struck me as weird. I saw faces. Like, I went to this place called Shore Club because they do like from 4 to 6.
I know the Shore Club.
Yeah, 4 to 6. It's $2 oysters and shrimp.
What?
Yes. And it's good shrimp. It's not bad stuff. It's good. $2 for an oyster, $2 for a good sized shrimp. So I went there yesterday.
Is this the one over by the CBC?
Yeah. Yes. That one. Go there.
I was in business with that guy.
Really?
David Eisenstadt, who owns the Keg. That's one of his high-end places. And we owned a radio station in Vancouver together.
That's right.
Which was called Shore.
Yeah. How'd that go, by the way? Anyway.
I am so rich. I'm the only person who ever owned a radio station and lost money.
Yeah, that's true.
At least I'm special.
There you go. It's like losing money on real estate. But anyway, I went in there, and the manager person at the door, not wearing a mask. And for a second, I'm like, oh. And then sat at the bar, and the bartender, not wearing a mask. And you know, for anyone listening that still is uncomfortable, and any person who works at a restaurant, I hope you can still wear a mask and everyone's fine with it, because that's in the end. We all are rooting for everyone to be comfortable. But I have to say, it was a delight. You know what was great? Not to fish out my mask to go to the bathroom. Like, just those little things.
Yeah, I'm glad I don't have to put on a mask that I've obviously overworn.
Yeah.
Just for the sight of it.
Yeah.
And so I feel like I'm holding a damp face cloth on my face as I'm walking around.
I have a Halloween one. Is it bad to be wearing like a Halloween mask when it's March? Like, does that scream, maybe you should change it?
I went to Comic-Con the other day because my daughter was there. And so there were people in masks. And so you would expect at Comic-Con, there were some interesting looking masks.
Yeah.
Spider-Man ones, you know, Venom's teeth, you know, all that stuff. It's amazing how not charming that is anymore. Mm-hmm. At the beginning of the pandemic, people were like, oh, you can be creative with it.
Yeah.
And now somebody's got a Riddler mask. It's like, fuck off.
Yeah, exactly.
Just put on a fucking mask and let us get on with our day.
It's like, yeah, nice job there, Paul Dano. I have to see it. I've heard it's okay.
My daughter gave it 3.9 out of 10.
Yeah, you know. I still have to see it.
I would love to see it because I'm a completionist. Mm-hmm. You know what I did? And I know you and I are a bit freeform. Maybe we're just so giddy to actually see each other.
We'll do sports.
But I decided I was going to go back and watch the whole Batman series before I get there, like starting with Batman Begins. Mm-hmm. It's better than you remember. You know, it got really kind of not great reviews at the time. But it's actually pretty good.
The first
Christopher Nolan one.
Christopher Nolan one.
Yeah. Like, it's a bit of the, it's a bit of the runt of the litter because Dark Knight
is and so good.
It's just so good.
Yeah.
Right. But it's almost like Godfather 3 that way.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we were going to do an all Godfather show. I guess they didn't have
Anyway,
yeah. Where, you know, it's compared against two masterpieces. And so even though it's good, you're like, but it is good. Katie Holmes, not good.
Katie Holmes is not. She's the Coppola. She's the Sofia Coppola of it.
That's exactly right. And oh, that's so good.
The worst part of Godfather 3 was her and the storyline with her and Andy Garcia. And Sofia Coppola is incredibly talented. But hey, everyone's allowed a stinker. And Godfather 3, that's her stinker.
Hey, man, we started off saying I lost money owning a radio station.
Exactly.
She wasn't great in Godfather 3.
Yeah.
And we've both gone on to incredible things.
I'm so curious about the next 6 months. There's going to be the predictable yelling about masks, take them on, leave them, take them off, all that. The predictable social media yelling is coming. But just what are the adjustments and people going back to work? And it's easy, and I say this on the front end, it's easy for me to say people should go back to work. I don't have children. I have an easy commute. I have it easy. But I just think it's important. Not that everything has to go back to the way it was, but just everyone go out, get out of your home, be around humans. Like, just I think it's so important.
My wife's going back to the office, and it's good for her, and she knows it. And it's not like it's easy because you haven't been there in 2 years, and it's a rare person that doesn't have at least some social anxiety in some way.
Yeah.
We all have amazing, we don't all have, but like you develop coping strategies as you get through life, but we haven't had to. One of the problems that we've had over the last 2 years is all these things that we fight through to interact with each other, we haven't had to do. And it's almost like when you're rehabbing an injury and they tell you, you got to make sure you walk or do some light jogging or whatever, because you'll build up scar tissue. I think the next 6 months is going to be breaking up a lot of emotional scar tissue for people. And so we have to be sensitive to each other, but we also have to be like, push maybe not the right word, be supportive, but like encourage forward motion.
Yes.
You know, backsliding is really easy because it will be hard. And the instinct will be that, okay, well, if you don't want to, you don't have to. Look, I've been through a lot in my life. There are times where that is true, but there are also lots of times where you do have to push through the discomfort because the good is on the other side. And so my instinct is to say, don't put someone in a position where they're miserable.
Mm-hmm.
Support people, but let's not lose sight of the goal, which is, you know, when we talk about let's not go back to the way it was, well, some of it was shit and we shouldn't go back to it. But the idea of being human beings together in a room, well, that's pretty good.
It is. And the thing is it is so, it's so easy to backslide because of no one likes to commute and all that, but you can now order all your, you can get your you can get your movie popcorn delivered to your home by Uber Eats as you pay $24.95 to watch a new movie on your really good looking TV that gets great sound and video quality.
Okay, so put a pin in that because I wanted to talk to you with the Oscars coming up this weekend.
Yeah.
About what Bob and Matt's solution would be to fix the movie industry.
Oh.
Right. We'll get into that. I thought like we could do that as our, you know, we used to do back in the day, your sort of big addition to the early version of the show was let's do a big question.
Right.
And let's do a big question. And today's big question is how do we fix movies? OK, well, but we'll come to it last. We always did the big question last.
Yeah.
Because we got to get to the Leafs. Let me throw out a question to you.
OK.
OK. Because this is, I think, the only question that matters. Did they do enough, too much, or too little?
They did too little, but they didn't have a choice.
Yeah.
The moment, like, it's so funny that the Leafs, no team loses more players that are placed on waivers than the Maple Leafs. It's like double. Kyle Dubas brought it up afterwards. But the one guy they needed was Mrazek, and they threw him out there, and they come on, someone, they went, you know, they were trolling, they were behind on their dinghy, just letting the lure, and no one bit. And the moment that happened at like 3 o'clock, it's like, okay, well, that's it. They don't have the money. They don't have the money to do anything of consequence. And then you find out Marc-Andre Fleury probably didn't want to come to Toronto. So they didn't do enough, but I'm not sitting here going, oh, you screwed up.
Mrazek's contract was the bobber. When you're fishing in a lake and you throw the line out there and the worms, it's dangling.
Yeah.
You know, come on, little fishy.
It's the red and white bobber.
Right. At the top. It's totally still.
Yeah.
It's just totally still. And it just drifts around a little. You're like... Yeah. There's no fish here.
No.
There's no fish.
Like, you can get, like, Adam Brooks or whoever it is has been claimed twice, or Ryan Dezingle. Like, there's a list of everyone gets claimed. But Mrazek, everyone's like, thanks, but no thanks.
It's the contract. It's the performance. And if we claimed him from someone else, wouldn't you be like, what the F?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Based on what you've seen. I want to jump ahead just a little bit, say, wow, I was shocked by Keefe and his comments on Mrazek, which were really quite unfiltered. It sounds like they're fed the F up with the goaltending, and they're not even going to pretend. Mm-hmm. It sounded like the, look, we will give you a chance, but there's a kid, and we'd rather ride and die with him than you. You got one chance to do this. That's what I heard.
Yeah. Well, you can understand the frustration. It's like all these other wonderful things are going on. The team is – it's so weird. The team could have its highest point total ever. Auston Matthews could win the Hart. No one's done that since Ted Kennedy in 1955. And yet it's the goalie thing that is just hanging. Like we talk about it, you can't enjoy the regular season because of what happened against Montreal in the playoffs last year. But another reason why it's hard to enjoy what's going on in front of you is you have no faith in the goaltending.
I think you're exactly right when you say they didn't do enough. And then there's a huge asterisk because that means a lot of things. It's not like, oh, you didn't keep up with the rest of the teams. Bruins got Lindholm and Panthers got Giroux. It's not that kind of thing. It's that in hockey, not having a good goalie is basically like detonating an EMP. Mm-hmm. It just levels everything within a certain blast radius.
Yeah.
And it just can't work. It doesn't matter. If Jack Campbell and Mrazek played even league standard hockey for the last 2 months, the Leafs are in first in the Atlantic.
Yeah.
In all likelihood, or certainly, like
they're within striking distance of Florida. They've passed Tampa, and we're not worried about Boston.
It would be a totally different outlook. And if I'm Kyle Dubas looking at that, part of me's got to be thinking, one, last year you gave away too much. You went out and got Nick Foligno. You gave up a first. He offered nothing. You got Riley Nash. You got Peter Riddick. And like all these things are, they just didn't work. Or David
work.
Riddick. David
yeah.
Riddick. It didn't work, and you gave up quite a bit to get all that stuff.
Yep.
You know you have a good team. You know parts of it are underperforming, and the most important part of it really sucks. You kind of got to just hope Campbell's good at this point.
That's it. I mean, really, this whole – everything comes down to the health of Muzzin and the health of Campbell. That's
I'm not sure it comes down to the health of Muzzin anymore because he's a bottom pair guy now.
But, I mean, that's a pretty high-end bottom pair guy.
Which is a great problem to have.
Which, yeah, exactly. No, it's Campbell first, and it's Muzzin, it's Muzzin second. And if you get just, you know, if you get Campbell even close, you don't have to get what he was when he was Vezina guy, nor when it's, oh, my God, he stinks guy. You get the middle guy, you can, you know, you can go far with that. You can go far with that. And, Joe, by the way, Giordano, good pickup, solid pickup. You got rid of, you lost a second rounder. He's going to help the team.
What you did was with Giordano, and I like that pickup a lot. They didn't give up a ton to get him. By getting rid of Dermott, who wasn't going to be part of your future plans, you helped to offset some of the cost with a draft pick you just pick up and flip.
Yeah.
I like it. He's mature. He wants to be here. I'm sure he's looking at this thinking, this team is damn good, and I can really add something to it. He must be thinking that.
Yeah.
So I like it. It's not the thing that they – I asked you before the trade deadline, if they don't get a goalie, is it considered a failure? I said yes, and now I feel that way because you have two jobs at the deadline. You're either a bad team and you're trying to offset assets to get futures, whether that's cap space or young players or whatever, or you're a good team and you're trying to beef up for the playoffs. Well, they didn't address their biggest need.
They did not.
And so they still have all the same problems they did before the trade deadline. So even though they might have like helped around the edges, the glaring hole still exists. It might not matter. It might not matter. I hope it doesn't, because watching them fan out in five games because of bad goaltending would make 3+ million people puke all at the same time.
I don't even want to think about that.
Right? It would be awful.
It would be awful.
It would be really awful.
God, I just...
But I do like the Giordano pickup.
Yeah, I like the, you know what, it makes sense, and he's a guy who ends cycles, and he can, you know, he just provides stability for a high variance team like the Maple Leafs that love chaos. He's the one that helps to lessen that.
If your forwards are going to create chaos, you'd like to believe someone on the back end can help clean up the inevitable mess that will come up. Look, when I look at Tavares and his 5-on-5 production, you know, like, Tavares and Nylander have been getting a lot of shit lately.
Yep.
They actually haven't been as bad as some people claim.
I know.
The statistically?
Yeah, if you...
They're not that bad.
Yeah, some of Tavares' gooder numbers, at least those two games with Marner... They're not as bad, but it's still a concern.
When people say, oh, maybe they should have dressed the second line, no.
Mm-hmm.
F that. There's $18 million sunk into two forwards on that line. We don't need to help them.
Yeah. Maybe it's Colin Blackwell. We'll see.
Right. Whatever.
Who knows?
Who knows?
Don't know a thing about that guy.
Sure. Energy guy.
Sure.
Yeah, give them their own Bunting. Yeah, Bunting exactly. Jr. But in theory, if you're investing $18 million in two forwards... You shouldn't at the trade deadline say, how do we fix these guys?
Agreed.
They're either going to fix themselves or they're the wrong guys.
And hey, Nylander was the best forward for the Maple Leafs in the playoffs last year.
I expect he'll be good again. The big question mark, I think, is Tavares. Only because they can't be a one-line team.
Nope.
They have to score both lines. They have to create matchup chaos for the opposition. You know, if Marner and Matthews are going to see someone's best shutdown pair... Tavares has to score at 5-on-5. He just has to, or they're not going to win. And I guess this is what Dubas knows. It's like they have a plan. They acquired the pieces to do the plan, and now the pieces either execute or they don't. But as a GM, what else are you supposed to do? Come up with a panic plan at the end? They built this thing to have four great forwards and enough good stuff around them that they can soar.
Yep.
It's either going to happen or it doesn't.
And last year, as we know, Matthews and Marner went bye-bye. Tavares got injured. And they lose to a team that might get the number one pick in the draft this year.
You know, losing Muzzin was obviously a huge thing in that game, in that series. And I think Giordano becomes insurance against that, so you're just not too thin on the back end. I really like the move. It's not a game changer. It's almost like a security blanket. Like, it's not like it makes them wicked better, but I think it keeps them from being wicked shittier. If something bad happens.
It's insurance. And insurance is not sexy. It's why in movies and TV shows, oh, he's an insurance salesman, which is code for, you know, he's not fun or exciting.
Yeah, he's got galoshes, all that stuff. Exactly. You know who Giordano is?
Mm.
He's the Geico Gecko.
Mm. I'm going to say, he's the guy from Groundhog's Day. Ned? the first step's a doozy. Needle Ned, whatever his name was. That's Giordano.
You know what I was thinking, Matt? We've talked a lot on the pod. A lot of people in the city have talked about how great the Atlantic is.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually not as good as the Metro.
Not
points-wise.
No, I know. I know we're not points-wise, but...
I got sucked into the narrative a little bit, and so I wanted to see, okay, so who's out there?
Yeah.
Hurricanes have 90 points, Pens have 87 points, New York Rangers have 85 points, and maybe more telling, the bottom of each division.
Yeah.
The Metro's worst teams are better than the Atlantic's worst teams.
That's true. It's just Tampa scares me more. Florida scares me. Well, I mean, Pittsburgh's an older team. Over the last 40 games, they've been great. I don't trust the Rangers. They rely so much on Shesterkin, which is fine. Actually, the Devils put up 5 on him in the second period last night. Carolina scares me, obviously. But Atlanta, the Atlantic, Tampa and Florida, they scare me more. And Boston, just PTSD, is always going to scare me.
I'm watching a little bit of post-trade deadline coverage on TSN, and Button and Mike Johnson are talking about, you know, Gino throws out the obvious question, who are now your favorites to make the cup final?
Yeah.
And both guys picked Tampa to come out of the East, which I think is a safe pick because you've seen them do it before.
Yeah.
They're very good. They've made a nice couple moves to help bolster their lineup, and they've got Vasilevsky, which, you know... But I thought to myself, God, you guys are really looking down on the Hurricanes. Like, the Hurricanes are really effing good. The reason I bring all this up is because I think where we're at now is the Leafs are in the mix.
Yes.
If all their guys play really well and it goes according to plan, they are as good as any of those teams. They're not necessarily better. They're not necessarily worse. Hurricanes are good. Tampa's always scary. Florida, I guess we'll find out. They got a hell of a lot of good players.
Yeah.
The Leafs are in that mix if everybody does their job.
Yes.
And we know from hockey, as we've said many times, it's a piece of frozen rubber on a sheet of ice. A lot of weird things happen, but they're in the mix. If the goaltending's not good, they're out in five or six in the first round.
That's it.
And that's it.
That's it.
So what, did they do enough? No.
No.
Because they didn't get rid of any of those lingering deep questions. But are they good?
Yes. Yeah. We'll talk later about playoffs. I'm already thinking, like, and this is the negative side, that show after, if they lose in the first round, that show after is going to suck. That first show after.
You get a lot of calls.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll take calls. I don't take calls now anyway. I'm so egotistical.
You got to take calls.
Yeah, no.
You gotta give the city a chance to heal.
You know what? And if they win, I would take calls. You got to treat it both with the same energy. Hey, there's a question I throw out. What's more compelling? Because in sports, we love round numbers. If you hit 300 for the season, ooh, 300 hitter. You hit 299, like, get out of here. The Leafs have 20 games left. The Raptors have 10 games left. Who's the more compelling final part of the season?
Absolutely the Leafs. Mm-hmm. Because I think the Raptors, unless there's some kind of miracle, I watched a breakdown of what they have to go 8-2 and Cleveland has to go 6-4. And there was just a lot of hoops that needed to happen for them to get the 6 versus being in the play-in game. And so I expect they'll be in the play-in game. And because that's just a coin flip, I don't feel there's a lot invested there. I'm more interested in watching individual guys, like the growth of Achua, the growth of Barnes. You know, can Kem Birch kind of write his season? Because when he's good, they're a lot better.
Yeah.
Chris Boucher. But none of those. Like, Matt, you're already looking at me like, holy frig. Like, that's what you watch the team for, is to see how Chris Boucher is doing. The Leafs, on the other hand, have some existential questions lingering.
Ah, but this is just regular season. I'm not talking postseason. Just regular season. And my answer to that is, if the Raptors beat Cleveland on Thursday,
okay,
then they have a legitimate chance, because Chicago's fallen as well. Chicago's not that good of a team. They're a good team. They're not a great team. If they beat Cleveland on Thursday, then they do have a legitimate chance to get the sixth seed. And then all those things you mentioned become more important. Scotty Barnes could still win Rookie of the Year and Precious Achiuwa and all these things. So if the Raptors, for the regular season, because we know who the Leafs are. We're just like, they get good goalies.
See, I don't think we know who the Leafs are, though.
We don't?
Well, here's the thing.
No, we don't. We don't know who, the regular
we don't know
season.
How the goalie is. Everybody is sitting there on pins and needles waiting for a goalie, like even with Shelley when he came in. And we all knew, look, we've seen Garrett Sparks story many, many, many times.
Yeah.
Kid comes in, wins a couple games. We all go crazy. 4 games later, like, oh, I guess he's not good.
Yeah.
We've seen this a million times, and yet we still do it. It's hard not to. But can somebody take the net is such a pressing question. There's no really pressing question for the Raptors right now. I don't think they're going to make it. Maybe I'm being too pessimistic, but I feel like we're just lining up for a play-in game. I feel like I know how that's going to end.
Okay.
As opposed to the Leafs, where I'm like, I have no idea, but there could be wild variance in between the pipes, and that will determine the quality of my spring.
All right. Well, that's a good answer. I feel like we're on Family Feud. You know, good answer.
Good answer. I gotta go out on my own, and I gotta say, Leafs. Yeah. I love that awkward pause when it's a terrible one and everyone's like,
yeah,
great job, Dad.
Everyone's head drops, and then comes the forced clapping. By the way, about Family Feud. If you've ever, it's always stressful when you're with a group of people and you're all hanging out watching TV and you've got to choose what to watch, because now you got to try to make everyone happy. Like, I remember being at Amy's cottage, and it's Amy and her sister and me and her mom and dad. And I'm trying to, and I got the remote because everyone's a coward. And I'll throw on the Family Feud. And you know what? For the first 30 seconds, I'll get shit for it. 3 minutes later, everyone is watching it.
And playing along at home.
Yes.
I am so glad you brought this up, Matt. I'm just going to pivot a little bit here and get comfy because, hot take, I love Family Feud.
It's so good.
I love it. Yeah. And I'll go even further than that. I'm not crazy about all of Steve Harvey's politics, but I think he's great.
He's an awesome host. He's a great host.
So good.
Yeah.
He's gentle. He's calm. He just enough push. I actually think Jerry D's doing a really good job. Jerry D, in a short period of time, grew into it. Now, he came with a personality.
Yeah.
That he honed, you know, doing his 10,000 hours of stand-up. And but you know, those are big shoes, right? It's like a Canadian Idol. You know, when Zach Werner came out and he had to be the Simon. Mm-hmm. Well, there is no Simon.
There is no Simon.
There is but one Simon.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you're an archetype.
Yeah.
And you'll always live in his shadow. But I kind of feel like Jerry found his own space.
Yep. No, Jerry's good. And what's great about Steve Harvey is you know what's coming and you still laugh. Like when you know, oh, there's a sexual an innuendo and some double entendres coming. And Steve gives good face and the reaction, and you know you're going to laugh.
All right, Matt, you're a student of the game.
Yeah.
By that, I mean comedy. And you and I came up during a time where it was sort of transitional. There was alternative comedy was just starting, mm-hmm. really, to take root in the 90s, the Janine Garofalos and the David Crosses and all that.
Yeah.
You know, and there were the roots in the 60s or whatever, but there was still like a lot of 80s style comedy, which is very broad.
Yeah.
And you know what? Kids today just can't understand the joy of a good look to camera.
Oh, Kenan Thompson.
Yes.
Kenan Thompson has made a living doing it, and it still gets me every time.
I'm already seeing the what's up with that sketch when he looks at camera and his eyes pop open just a little.
Yeah.
Like Steve Harvey is a master of the slow turn to camera.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I wanted to do a photo series once upon a time. It was called 13 Ways of Looking at Camera 2, mm-hmm. where it was me and our friend Ben Roderman, who was like a student of the game, too.
Yep.
And the first three pictures would just be like, that was no lady, that was my wife.
Mm-hmm.
And then 13 consecutive pictures of him giving different looks to Camera 2.
That'd be great. But yeah, gives good face. Like that's gives good face.
You know, my wife said something really smart once because she's a really astute observer of comedy. It's her job. And she said, you know, the thing that Steve Harvey does really well is his pace allows everyone to play along.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't gallop through jokes. He lets them sit and land so that everybody at home can play along.
And that's that is a hard thing to do. I remember when I was starting to do stand-up, and this was like 20 plus years ago now, and I would rush through. Even when I'm hearing I'm getting a laugh, I would rush to the next joke. And that was just nervousness or insecurity about your routine or your material. But it's one of the hardest things. It's just let it linger. Let the audience consume it before you move on. It's a hard thing to do.
It really is. It's one of the reasons, and you know this from doing broadcasting, is one of your most effective tools is silence. It's one of the hardest things to get comfortable with.
Yeah.
You feel like you're paid to talk. Which in a way you are, but really what you're paid to do is communicate.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you can communicate better with long pauses. You know who was really good at it? McCowan was excellent at the long pause.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. McCowan was great. On the American side, and maybe I appreciate because he also does like a 3-hour show on his own, Colin Coward.
Mm-hmm.
Coward is another one, but I don't know how many people listen to Coward. But yeah, the pause is important. Because it adds gravitas to whatever is going on. And even now, sometimes I have a hard time with that.
And when you make a good point, sometimes you have to let people sit with it a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And actually absorb the full impact of what you're saying. If you just blow past it really fast, especially on radio, because you can't see, like you don't see faces, you don't get body language. All you have is the voice
mm-hmm.
and what's going on in your own head when you listen. So yeah, Steve Harvey, to just take it back, is I watched a little bit of him and Jerry Seinfeld doing the comedians getting coffee.
Yep.
And listening to those two masters talk about jokes, honest to God, it was just a thrill. It was like two Buddhist monks talking about, you know, the nature of reality.
Yeah, I love that. It's such a well-crafted show. It's short. You get to see food. You get to see a car. You know, they're yammering for a while. It's really well done.
One of the things I love about Jerry in that is, like, he's confident enough in his own abilities that he can sit with anyone. He never feels anyone's better than him.
Yeah.
And he's genuinely interested in their craft.
Well, I mean, he was so good at that. It's one of the keys to Seinfeld is that Seinfeld was never the funniest one on the show.
No.
It was Kramer, Elaine, it was George. He was the ultimate point guard. He's like, here, you go. I'll get my assist numbers, but you're going to get all the scoring.
People must have said it before, but I love that analogy. He was the point guard. He was the John Stockton.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just setting up pick and roll with Elaine Bennis over and over. Like, that's what it is, actually. Stockton to Malone was basically like Kramer going through the door.
Yes.
You've seen it a million times. It always works. Mm-hmm. It's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. That's what it is.
Hey, I want to go back to the Leafs quickly before we move on to other stuff. I was really impressed with Dubas. over the last couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
One, he took
that shot at Kyle Davidson from the Blackhawks. That was good.
Which was great.
Yeah.
But what it kind of made me think is he really quietly has some real BDE. Mm-hmm. Like, he's in a tough spot right now, and he didn't do deals he didn't need to make. Like, we've talked about his job is on the line here.
Yeah.
Right. The if they go out in five, as much as people will want to get rid of Campbell and Mrazek, they'll want him going too. But I really admired his composure.
He is tougher than a lot of the older GMs because he lives in the world of social media. I don't know how much he's on it. You know,
that's a great point.
Twitter or Facebook, or Instagram, whatever he's doing. But like, he probably feels it more than if it's Brian Burke,
mm-hmm.
you know, like just some of the older GMs who didn't grow up with social media, don't care about it, aren't really on it. And so he certainly feels the slings and arrows more than I think a lot of the other GMs.
One of the things when you're smart, and I go back to the Mike Martz playbook,
mm-hmm.
is because you can do it, some people feel like you have to.
Yeah.
And you don't need 714 great plays. You need 20 ones that can't be stopped.
Yeah.
And just because you can think of the extra 690 doesn't make you smarter. And I wonder if Dubas is getting to the Alex Anthopoulos point where it's like, my brain is elite and I can think of things that almost nobody can think of. But just because I can think of them doesn't mean we should do them.
Yeah.
Alex Anthopoulos, I feel like, got to a point where he's like, I should just get good players and make sure they like to win
mm-hmm.
and get basically along.
Yeah.
And then get the fuck out of the way.
Yeah.
And I wonder if Dubas is entering that place where it's been like, okay, I've been boy wonder calculator guy. I've been wheeler and dealer guy. I've been step out of Lou Lamoriello's shadow guy. Now maybe it's not about me and I should just let these excellent players I got do their jobs. And if they can't, get rid of them.
Yeah, the get rid of them. That's a conversation.
But we're not there yet.
We're not there yet. I bet the most frustrating thing for Kyle Dubas is his plan was going really, really well, and then COVID came.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think any team in the NHL got impacted more by COVID and what COVID did to the salary cap than the Leafs, where... This is just strictly on the ice, where... And we don't have to relitigate contracts, and should these guys have taken less money, and wait a minute, why are Colorado and Florida and Tampa players taking less money than Matthews and Marner, and that, all that stuff? Like... Dubas had to realize, okay, I'm going to sign these guys. I have those things. Very few teams have four of those. And did I overpay? I did. But the projections are the cap's going to keep going up. Oh, Seattle's coming into the league. Remember when Vegas came in and the cap went way up? That's going to keep happening. And then it never did because of COVID. And I think that more than anything else, more than what Kyle Davidson released to the media or what players get snatched up on waivers, that is the number one thing that I bet irks Dubas, because he had no control over that.
And I think him willing to take a shot at a fellow GM is just so rare for us, because yes. Those guys are the ultimate country club.
Oh, yeah.
There's 32 of them. They have to. They're all in the same boat.
Mm-hmm.
They have to work together as much as they have to compete against each other.
It's like it's like when coaches go into the broadcast booth, they never rip another coach. Stan Van Gundy is awesome. He is awesome, except if he's got to give opinions on what plays that coach did. Then he just clams up.
And it makes sense. I mentioned that I thought Kelly Yarncroc would be a Leaf. Mm-hmm. And part of that was because I thought, you know, he's a good player and they wanted a little bit more forward depth and all that. But the other thing was Seattle, particularly Ron Francis and Kyle Dubas, have a good relationship.
Yeah.
And in business, you just go back to the things that work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's... Again, you can have all the numbers on a page and, you know, beautiful PowerPoint, but it's relationships. At the end of the day, do I trust the relationship?
Yes.
That you're going to do well and I'm going to do well and we're both going to walk away from this feeling good. I remember Phil King was the programmer and eventually president of CTV, and he took both of us under his wing.
Mm-hmm.
Was a great guy, love Phil, and he said something so smart, and I just... Like, it was just so smart. He said, you know, when I'm negotiating, I think about what's good for us. I try to think about what's good for them. And I try to find a point in the middle because that's where we should be.
Yeah.
And, you know, the idea of like, my job is to crush someone in a negotiation. Well, that feels great. But in the end, it's not really smart for business long term. what you really need is the relationships and mutually, you know, expanding relationships. So that's why I kind of thought that he would do a deal with Ron Francis, that Kyle Dubas would. And that's why I was so shocked that he took a shot at this Chicago guy. He must have really been like, hey, you little pisher.
Yeah.
Oh, F you.
Well, you know, by that getting released, then if you're Jack Campbell, how do you feel about it? And I mean, I'm sure that Dubas doesn't care as much about what Mrazek thinks. But I think that's what it is. You always want to keep everything in-house, and that got leaked.
It's funny because with Keefe's comments on Mrazek, it was like, oh, Dubas is worried about Jack Campbell. And Sheldon Keefe was like, hold my beer.
Yeah.
Let's talk goalies. I got some dot, dot, dots.
Yeah.
I had time to write them when I was sitting next to Parker Beer Guy.
Yeah. Let's do some dot, dot, dots.
Okay. And we haven't done this in so long, but the idea is I just throw out random thoughts connected by dots, a la Larry King and Steve
Larry
Simmons.
King. Once again, skewing to the younger audience with the Larry King reference.
I think the Lakers will reach the conference.
Wow.
I haven't done this in a while. Okay, ready?
Yes.
I think the Lakers will reach the conference final.
Okay.
Dot, dot, dot. Skinny Vladdy makes me happy and sad. Dot, dot, dot. I lost my daughter's AirPods. She doesn't know. Do I tell her? Dot, dot, dot. And bubble tea is replacing weed, which once upon a time replaced cheap sushi. Dot, dot, dot.
There are a lot here. I want to go with AirPods.
Okay, let's do this.
I want to go with AirPods. AirPods first. Apple isn't even trying to hide the fact that they've created something that they know you're going to have to replace 12 times a year. It's not even like, you know, when your battery on your phone, it's the best. It lasts forever. Then you wake up one day and it's at 23%. And it's always at 23% because they sneakily get it so that it's going to die on you. But it's going to take some time. When you get these AirPods, you're like, this is going to last a weekend. It's impossible not to lose those things. It's why I refuse to have them. I need the cord.
So here's how it works. My kid gets them from the aunts and uncles for Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tech is always a safe
gift.
Like mid to high range gift.
Yep.
So all the aunts and uncles get together. They buy her AirPods. Mm-hmm. But she likes the big headphones.
Yeah.
You know, she's like, she just likes the big headphones.
Yeah.
So they're just sitting there. They're not being used. And I said, look, I'll buy them off you.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll be mine.
Right.
She's like, okay. So I started walking around, but I haven't given her the money yet. Mm. Technically, they're still hers.
Yeah.
And I took them out the other day because I wanted George to show me how to use them. And I don't know where they are now.
No.
I have no idea where they are now. So right now, do I give her the money? Because then I'll be just giving her like $150 for nothing. I'm going to look like an idiot.
Yeah.
Or the fact that she's not really thinking about it. Do I just let it ride?
Ooh. Okay. I see what you're doing here. Now you have to give her the money. You're going to have to get, because she's going to realize at some point she's going to be. And the thing is, she's going to look around for them because not that she's going to use them, but because they're part of her world, her land, her territory. And she's going to want to know where they are.
And it may not be today. It may not be tomorrow. But at some point, she will be like, hey, where's the AirPods?
Yeah.
And then I'm going to, and it's really bad if like months go by.
Yeah.
And I just didn't say anything. It's like, oh, I've been quietly lying to you this whole time.
Yeah, you got to be the adult because she'll sniff out that you're not being an adult here. And once she knows that, it's the biggest secret that parents have to keep from their kids. Parents are really not that far off from being a child.
Matt, one of a parent's most important jobs is to lie to their kid constantly.
Yeah.
Yes, that's a great picture.
Mm-hmm.
You drew it beautifully.
Yeah.
Sure, you can be whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
It is so important to lie to these kids constantly. So I'm not embarrassed or ashamed to do that. I feel like it's part of my job. But I don't want to get caught later having looked like I was trying to hide something.
Yeah.
And your point is, see, the funny thing is if I give her the money up front, then she'll forget about the AirPods.
Yeah.
Because she already got what she wanted.
Yeah.
You lost yours.
Mm-hmm.
What do I care?
Yeah. So you got to give her the money. Then you got to go and buy other AirPods. Pretend it's hers. You know, like you're gonna have to eat the money on this.
Am I going to have to take back salary?
Yeah, you're going to have to, you know, You're going to have to go buy another pair and then go, see, I never lose these. Honey, this is called being an adult, you know, and
well, that's the other thing is I lose so much moral high ground if I go and lose something immediately.
Yeah.
And then I'm on her case about being sloppy. It's like you didn't even have those $200 AirPods for a week.
So you have to lie, but it's a different lie. You've got to buy others, and that's the lie.
I love the idea of the concept of retaining salary on a mistake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what it basically is. Yeah. I have to take back like the full salary and basically just give this away.
These AirPods are, it's Peter Mrazek. Is basically this, like, you're going to pay. It didn't work out. It didn't take long for him to realize it didn't work out. And it's going to be an like you buying another set of earpods or AirPods, what the fuck they're called, is basically giving a first round pick so someone can take the Patrick Marleau deal. That's what this is.
Oh, man. Yeah. That's so good. All right. The one I want to do from the .. Mm-hmm. Skinny Vladdy makes me happy and sad. He posted to Twitter the other day the picture where he's in profile.
Yeah.
And he's lost, I guess, what, 30 pounds?
Mm-hmm.
First son's like, oh, me at 260. This one's me at 235.
Yeah.
And he looks a lot better now, like slimmer, more fit. And I thought, one, I don't think anybody should have to apologize for their size.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The guy was an MVP candidate at 260. So he probably doesn't need to apologize like he has something to prove. Two, can't we just have a chubby athlete? I love the chubby athlete, Matt. We all love the chubby athlete.
We all love Kirby Puckett.
Right.
We all love Tony Gwynn.
Right? Isn't there just something so special about looking at a guy who can do something at an elite level? Maybe only 1,000 people, not even 1,000, maybe 10 people in the case of Vladdy in the world can do what he does.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks like he gets butter on his popcorn.
Yeah. Oh, no, he gets extra.
Right?
And he's the one that gets the butter in the middle of the popcorn.
The second layer. The double decker.
Yeah. Yeah. He gets that.
You know, I remember there was an Onion headline about Tom Brady rage eats a 13th almond.
Yeah.
And I don't begrudge him his success. He has worked for it, and that's a beautiful thing. He had a goal, he executed it, and he's lived like a monk. But isn't it kind of more likable when the guy who looks like Jack Black hits 340?
Yeah. Okay. Here's a perfect example of that. Bartolo Colon, and I'll probably get a little bit wrong, but apparently had like another family.
Like Willie Loman?
Like literally, yes, like another family. I got to look it up, but no one questioned him or family values or morality because he's a big chubby guy. Ah, look at him out there. And we loved watching when he would have to run and stuff because he got a fat pass.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you know, there is something lovable about it. By the way, it's only really in baseball. You know,
not true.
Phil Kessel.
Grant Fuhr was one of the great playoff goalies and clutch goalies of all time.
Yeah.
He wasn't exactly a piece of iron.
Current day. Who are the current day lovable chubby athletes?
Well, this is my point about Vladdy.
He was one of the last.
He was one of the last of a kind, a dying breed that some of us need.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm kind of built like a running back in the sense that I'm not super tall. I'm 5'10".
Yeah.
And like Eric Cartman, I'm big boned.
Yeah.
So even when I lose weight, I don't look skinny.
Right.
Yeah, I just, right?
Yeah.
So I can go from being, who's a good lean 5'9 running back, muscular, Barry Sanders.
I was going to go, if you want, Eckler from the Chargers, because he's small, but yeah, he's built.
Right. I can go from that to being Eckler. Craig Hayward.
Right. Ironhead Hayward. Yes. Right.
In a couple pizzas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. High variance. Like the Leafs.
I've got range.
High variance.
Yeah. Right now I'm in a Craig Hayward phase, which is why I'm wearing track pants during this podcast.
You're short yardage. It's goal line. It's time for the goal line package to come out.
When the COVID started,
yeah,
I was a guy with a great second level.
Yeah.
Now I'm short yardage.
Yeah. You know, when the COVID started, hey, it's 3rd and 15. Throw him a screen. He'll make a guy miss. You know,
I went from Darren Sproles to Craig Ironwood in one pandemic.
In one pandemic. Yeah, we all did.
I'm short yardage.
Yeah, you are short yardage back right now. Seems to lose as much.
Oh, man, I miss this so much. That's great.
The one good thing, though, is Vladimir, where there was no weight lost, is in the caboose.
Yeah.
So where all that power, that Kyle Lowry caboose power is still there.
Canadians are not into butts the way the rest of the world is.
That is true.
I don't know why. I have no great theory.
Yeah.
I have no great unifying theory of butts.
Yeah.
But I do know this, that when you travel, people are more interested in butts in other places.
Yes.
Like Brazil,
mm-hmm.
it's all butts.
Yeah. Much more ass. We are not an ass-centric country.
No. Like,
is it because it's cold?
I don't know. Because we wear bulky clothes all the time. You can't see anyone's body anyway.
Yeah. I don't know. But no, you're right. You're right. We're not as much about the ass.
And that's a shame.
Yeah.
And that's a shame.
Yeah.
Because it's fun.
Yeah. Well, to quote Al Pacino from Heat, she's got a great ass. Got your head all up in it. By the way, that scene in that scene in Heat, the guy who's does all the voices, Mo Sizlak and stuff for the Simpsons.
Uh-huh.
I'm forgetting the guy's. I should remember the name of the actor. He's also Brockmire. He had no idea that Al Pacino was going to do it. So when you watch that scene and you see him react like that, that's not acting.
He's like, really laughing.
That's like, what is Al doing here?
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, let's do a quick Jeff Pollock plug.
Oh yeah.
And then get to movies because we probably don't have a ton of time left. Maybe 10 minutes.
We got around 10 minutes. Yeah. JeffPollock.com. Jeff is the sponsor of this podcast. He's our friend. And if you need legal help, if you anything, big stuff, little, it's a little boutique accounting/law firm. And his wife is like a brilliant accountant. So if you need to help with taxes, you know, now's the time of year for it. JeffPollock.com. That's Jeff with a G. And Jeff, if you're listening, I'm just waiting. I know when I get back from Florida, can't wait to go over and have a barbecue at his place. Not only a lawyer, but he's great with the egg. You know, the green egg where you put the meat in and stuff. Ah, absolute delight. JeffPollock.com.
There's something really admirable about a dinner that takes 10 hours to prepare.
Yeah.
What's the magic number for, like, once you've passed it in terms of prep, you've really gone the extra mile? I think it's 4 hours. Anything that takes more than 4 hours to prepare, you're basically the hero.
Yeah. I find with that, then, I feel more pressure to sit at the table longer.
Hmm.
You know, it's like, wait, I can't. We have to sit here more than 23 minutes if we've been slow cooking ribs all day.
You can't really, like, leave everyone at the table and sit with a paper plate on your knee while you watch TV.
Mm-hmm. No, you have to be around a table.
Yeah.
Y'all got to be around the table.
All right, so big question today. What would Bob and Matt do to fix movies? And I throw this out because it's the Oscars this weekend. And I realized that this year I know less about the Oscars than I ever have before.
Yeah.
I don't think I could name 3 Best Picture nominees. I just don't know much. I really don't. And that's shocking because you and I, historically, separately in our lives, but historically have loved the Oscars.
Yes.
We throw parties. When mm-hmm. we were kids, we were, you know, like trivia buffs.
Mm-hmm.
And now it feels symptomatic of a lack of interest in whatever's at the theater.
Yeah, I think part of it is just because everything else, like COVID, because you're not going to the movies, and then it's hard to find them. And all the movies are, wait, is it on Amazon? Is it on Netflix? Is it on Disney? What the hell is this movie? So that's absolutely part of it. So hopefully that just gets healed a bit by people going, you know, just everything going back to whatever normal is going to be. Also, part of it is you need, if you want to bring in younger people, you've got to nominate. Everything can't be Power of the Dog, which, by the way, is, it looks great. It's a piece of shit movie. Get out of here with Power of the Dog. Coda or Licorice Pizza. Anyway, but Spider-Man should be nominated. Spider-Man was an incredibly well-executed, it was a great movie. It should have been nominated. And when you nominate movies like that, where you can see the craftsmanship all over that movie, then at least that brings a more of a broader appeal and would bring more eyeballs to the Oscars.
Where they don't have this problem is the Grammys, where they don't not nominate mm-hmm. albums that are really big.
Mm-hmm.
You can be Peter Gabriel and put out a record like So and win a ton of, you know, Grammys.
Yeah.
And it's got artistic merit. But it's also really freaking popular.
Yes.
They generally lean into things because they're popular
mm-hmm.
and they have artistic cred.
Yeah.
The Marvel thing really is at the heart of this, isn't it? It's really at the heart of it because the movie is not dead. It's just that anything other than the blockbuster is really hard to get excited
well,
about.
Well, then that's the other thing is much like when I feel like a politician, this is about helping the middle class.
Right.
I'll up in the air. Mm-hmm. The Jason Reitman movie, George Clooney, Jason Bateman's in it, small role, and Anna Kendrick.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great movie. I love that movie. And it fits that sort of middle class. What we need is, and you know what? Here, we'll just stick with George Clooney for a second. Michael Clayton. Michael Clayton was a great movie. And Tilda Swinton, she won Best Supporting Actress for it. But that's a middle class movie. We need more middle class movies. And we need the odd Marvel film to get that Best Picture nomination.
The way that the music industry used to work, and I remember when I was in it, I was in an indie band that was kind of like we're like an A24 kind of band. You know, we had aspirations of commercial success, mm-hmm. but we were also art house when it comes down to it.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, so we would hang around a lot of people who were really into art, and they would laugh at the Aerosmiths of the world. And I remember saying to them all the time, are you nuts? If Aerosmith's next record tanks, 10 of your friends don't get record deals.
Yeah.
You need the big ticket items to be big ticket items. Then what you need is an industry that will pay that down. And the trickle down,
yeah,
is what's missing here. I'm with you 100% in that the middle class has been left to flounder.
Yes.
The bottom end, and by that I would say genre films, there's still people who go to see horror. That still makes decent money.
Mm-hmm.
You can even get some decent talent to go and do some prestige horror.
Yep.
But what's missing is that movie that costs $50 million and makes $100 million.
If you have more of that, it's just going to draw more people in.
It needs stars to do it, though.
Yes.
That's number one. My number one thing is you need stars doing middle class movies.
Well, I mentioned George Clooney.
It was a perfect example. Up in the Air mm-hmm. is a lovable movie.
Yeah.
It's an excellent movie. Mm-hmm. And it's got an A-list star in it.
Yeah.
You can't just keep slapping these guys in tights or telling them to make prestige HBO TV. They have to make these smaller movies or else nobody's going to care about the industry. You need stars. Channing Tatum just had a recent movie called Dog, I think. And
yeah.
it did good box office. Channing Tatum hasn't done a movie in something like 5 or 6 years or whatever. But that's an example of what the industry has lacked. A guy with name brand recognition doing original IP for a budget that's not huge.
You know, it's the other thing we need?
Hmm.
Comedies.
Hmm.
Where's like when was the last like Bridesmaids and Heat and Spy, Melissa McCarthy. I think she had the last run. You know, where's the next Old School, Hangover, Step Brothers, Wedding Crashers? You know, where is that?
It's a great question, and I think it's such a bad bet. Not just financially, but in terms of brand for people to do comedy, because good comedy is always transgressive.
Mm-hmm.
It, by nature,
yeah.
It's transgressive. And we live in a period where people don't have senses of humor.
Yeah.
So transgression becomes a grenade. So who the fuck would actually do a comedy? And the comedies that get done now tend to be explorations of an individual or a subset of,
yes.
of a community.
Yeah.
And so it's as like Atlanta, I think, is an incredible comedy.
Yeah.
It's funny. It's incredibly well acted. It's a perfect example of a good version of this. It's a guy in a world, and I go into that world. It's like, oh, this is an amazing place. And it's as much as about identity as, it, you know, it's not about waking up in a place drunk and there's a tiger in the room and Mike Tyson punches you.
Yeah.
Like, we're just not going to make that for a long time. Maybe ever again.
That'd be a shame.
I think you'll see it in animation. I think one of the reasons you've seen the rise of animation over the last 10 years is because people will lend their voices to this stuff mm-hmm. because you don't actually stick a face onto the transgression.
Is this just because the executive and the actor is afraid that Twitter's going to get mad at them?
Yes. It is literally only that.
God,
and it's not if, it's when.
Yeah. We're nearly out of time, but wow, the power of Twitter, like the reality versus perception. Everyone's afraid of Twitter. Give it a day. Everyone moves on.
Yeah. It's just that nobody wants to be left holding the bag.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. And
comedy can't live that way.
I know.
You know,
I want like, the next Borat. I want like just... I was going to give Chris Rock, but Chris Rock's never really done many good comedies.
I don't agree with Dave Chappelle.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't agree with the people who say you have to ban him.
Yeah.
You have to fight him.
Mm-hmm.
If you disagree, you have to fight him.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where we're at with... You know, like nobody, we've almost circumvented the idea of democratic unpleasantness. We've just gone right to, let's just cut it out like a cancer.
That's the other thing missing. We need the tent pole comedies. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's certainly for you. The other thing we need to do, actually, is streaming has to take a hit because they've got so much money. They can attract so much talent. It just sucks all the air out of the room. But that's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Because, honestly, we've hit such a peak. Like, how much more time can you spend streaming? How much more content can they possibly put on there? How many more people can actually buy this stuff? Disney's numbers, like the stock price, is starting to go down. It was a huge soaring thing when Disney Plus came out because they had all this IP and all that. You know what's really interesting? Disney is a case study of streaming gone right and wrong.
Mm-hmm.
The Marvel stuff has been incredibly successful for them. The Star Wars stuff hasn't.
Not as much, no.
Really hasn't.
Yeah.
Like I will tune into Disney Plus because I need to watch Hawkeye or Loki or whatever. I'm still all in.
Yeah.
I'm starting to give a shit less and less about this Star Wars universe.
Well, the Book of Boba Fett was, you know, eh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
But even still, it just feels like it's too far away from the stuff I loved. Like, they're expanding the world, but everybody got excited by The Mandalorian, spoiler alert, when Luke showed up.
Yeah. Oh, right? That was so good.
Right?
It was basically, and everyone thought that Baby Yoda was cute. So Baby Yoda is cute, and hey, look, there's Bill Burr. That's fun. But then Luke came in. We're like, yeah!
Take Baby Yoda out of The Mandalorian.
Mm-hmm.
How many people care?
Tiny.
Yeah.
Tiny.
A niche group who think it's kind of cool to do a spaghetti Western based around the Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
But you put Baby Yoda into it, and we're all in.
But having said that, Ewan McGregor, Obi-Wan.
Looks so good!
Yeah! And like that, we're back in again.
Woo! I love streaming.
Yeah. I can't. By the way, then we got to end this. I'd like to know the amount of time someone spends looking for something versus watching the content.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because like you just sit there and you're going through and you can feel the tension in the room because like I gotta find something.
Do you know what I watched last night, Matt?
Mm.
I watched Iron Man 2.
Yeah.
Do you know why? Because I knew it was over in 2 hours.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to spend time finding a new show, investing in it, discovering it's not that great.
Yeah.
It's almost like dating.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have to go out all the time and meet all these assholes? Can't I just go back to someone I already know and have sex with my ex?
Yes.
Iron Man 2 last night was sex with the ex.
Yeah. You know what you're going to get. And you're
shocked. There's no commitment here. We've already gotten over each other. We just need a little human contact.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're basically choosing Mickey Rourke over a well-crafted universe because you don't want to get involved in it.
That's exactly it.
Goodbye, Bob.
That would have been good.
That would have been good.
All right, go for it.
Yeah. Goodbye, Bob.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.